rest of the story. In our nation's beginnings, the states were anything but united. Under the wishy-washy so-called Articles of Confederation, states behaved as independent countries. Some of them taxed visitors, others cranked out worthless currency. By the fall of 1786, the mounting chaos had become apparent to everybody. The proposed remedy was a new form of government, sharply defined by a constitution, and such a document was produced in the summer of 1787. That is history, but this is the rest of the story. Delegates were elected to convene in Philadelphia. Day one of the Constitutional Convention was scheduled for May 14. Practically nobody showed up. It would take almost 2 weeks to accumulate enough delegates to decide on anything. And few of those gathered were optimistic. Of the 55 who came to Philadelphia, there were never more than 46 meeting together at the same time, rarely more than 30. Over the months which followed, there was considerable conflict. The Bill of Rights was a hassle. In fact, the early drafts of two constitutions had no Bill of Rights. Tom Jefferson was in Paris when he learned of the oversight. He was furious. He expressed his outrage to James Madison by mail. And there were other sore spots, such as the concepts of a strong presidency and the proposed ratio of one representative for every 40,000 citizens. Edmund Randolph argued that that was too few congressmen, that it would result in a dangerous concentration of power at the federal level. Elbridge Gerry became so upset that he once made 7 speeches in a single day declaring reason after reason why he could not approve the Constitution in its current form. At one point, Luther Martin of Maryland just got up and walked out. He said, "I'll be hanged if ever the people of Maryland agree to it." To which a colleague replied that the people of Maryland were likely to hang Martin anyway. It was a long, hot summer that produced the Constitution of the United States. The delegates convened in May, and they were still shouting at each other in mid-September. Everyone had the right formula, a Virginia plan, a New Jersey plan, the Great Compromise. But somehow, ultimately in agony and ecstasy, somehow freedom was born. In school classrooms bedecked by presidents' portraits, generations of American pupils have been enamored by an implicit and plausible myth that our founding fathers were cheerfully united by a common purpose. There is value in remembering that such is just not true. For indeed, 55 delegates arrived in Philadelphia for our Constitutional Convention, and yet that number reflects only 3/4 of the delegates elected by the states. A full quarter of the elected delegates never showed up at all, and another quarter left the convention early for various reasons. So that means that only about half of the delegates actually stuck it out and signed their names to our Constitution. The rest succumbed to apathy or aggravation or sheer stubbornness. In fact, Rhode Island, which refused to participate in the convention altogether, and North Carolina, were still not part of the Union when years later our government began operating as the United States of America. What I'm saying is that in the early years of our ism, the greatest threat to independence was too much of it. There can be such a thing as too much independence. Let posterity heed that sometimes the first enemy of freedom is freedom. That is the rest of the story.